Welcome to the very first episode of Armchair Strategist, ORF's new podcast series on all things national security. I'm Ritika Pasi.
And I'm Angad Singh.
Angad brings his love for all things military, and I'm interested in moves on the regional geopolitical chessboard. In this first season of The Armchair Strategist, together, we're looking forward to bringing you a weekly dose of added perspective with our selection of guests on what's happening at India's borders, in its region, and with its military. This first week, we're starting with the India-China standoff, the state of affairs right now at the border, and what India can expect and must be ready for in the coming weeks and months.
The Chinese buildup since May at multiple points along the LAC in Ladakh resulted in the June 15th Galwan Valley clash, where 20 Indian soldiers were killed and a still unknown number of Chinese soldiers were killed or injured. Even now, a series of military and diplomatic talks later, there is little change on the ground. In fact, both sides have apparently amassed some 100,000 soldiers, and Indian Defense Minister Rajnath Singh recently said during a trip to Ladakh that he couldn't guarantee to what extent the situation would be resolved. To discuss this ongoing tense conflict, we have with us Lieutenant General H.S. Panag, former Northern Army commander with years of experience in this very area that faces both China and Pakistan. He's also out with a new book, The Indian Army, Reminiscences, Reforms and Romance. Congratulations, General, and welcome.
Thank you very much.
Before we begin talking about the current conflict in detail, we'd love to ask you, you've had a long and eventful career in the military. Has the writing always been on the wall with regards to the India-China border? Have warning signs always been there that episodes such as Galwan were basically just a matter of when they would occur? Clearly, despite repeated diplomatic agreements on the border, 1993 onwards, at the end of the day, the issue remains that there is no mutual agreement on the boundary. Coupled that with Mao's five fingers of Tibet.
No, not really. See, the last major incident to take place on the LAC prior to 2013 was in 1986, the Sundrong Thu incident. And after that incident, the Indian Army, which used to be main defenses were 40 to 50 kilometers behind in the northeast and even further behind from the present main defenses, almost 100 kilometers away from the LAC in Ladakh. Mm-hmm. We went forward into the forward posture through Operation Falcon and a series of checkerboard exercises. And in fact, General Sundarji's strategy of matching China there in Sundrong Thu in the northeast, in Arunachal Pradesh, and taking up a very strong view and almost trying to getting behind what the Chinese were occupying, that ensured that we remained in the forward posture. Now, since 86 and 87, thereafter Mr. Rajiv Gandhi's visit, and then, of course, the 93 agreement, up to about 2013, things generally remained, what should say, normal, and apart from the few areas of differing perception, there was never any incident on the LAC. The first major incident took place in 2013. And this, to my mind, which is also the root cause of the present situation, is that the road that we were making to the DBO, Daulat Beg Oldi, it was started reaching towards the Depsang Plains in 2013. Because these roads are all the strategic roads had come up from the China Study Group in 2007. So 2013, it started reaching there, so the border infrastructure. And this is what China became sensitive about. This led to the Depsang incident in 2013, then the Chumar incident in 2014. Chumar was also again because of our road making that we are making to Chumar, and from Chumar, the major Chinese town, which is about 50 kilometers from Damchok, but Chumar is of course further south, it can be directly threatened. So that is then that happened. Doklam was an unrelated incident, in the sense that it concerned the territory of Bhutan, and we guarantee Bhutan's security. Yeah. So I would say that as our border infrastructure development has taken place, there has been the incidents increased, the line of control violations, now line of actual control violations increased, and a certain amount of jostling, pushing, and this thing started. And all this began somewhere around 2013. Prior to that, there may have been an odd incident. And peace had generally prevailed from 1987 up to 2013, a peace and tranquility on the LAC.
So you seem pretty clear then, General, that, you know, and now and in your past writings on this issue, that this whole thing is centered on Chinese sensitivity regarding Indian ability to access Aksai Chin. So what would you then make of other reports, other lines of reasoning that say tensions flared up in September last year, you know, after the Article 370 and converting Ladakh into Union Territory? And other lines of thought say that it has nothing to do with infrastructure or map making. Is just opportunistic because, you know, Northern Command had to cancel the exercises this year because of COVID, and the Chinese had built up, you know, for their own exercises, and it may have just been purely opportunistic of the Chinese to take advantage of the gaps on our side. What would you make of that?
See, whatever I have written is always qualified. In every time I have dealt with this issue, I have mentioned one thing, that the overall Chinese strategic aim is to assert its hegemony over India. And it does not want to treat India as an equal partner in the traditional competitive conflict amongst nations for economic and political power. To that end, it has kept the border unsettled and has not even agreed to demarcate the LAC, let alone to find a final settlement over the overall broader boundary question of Aksai Chin, etc. And in this higher strategic aim, there are a host of reasons. Our opposition to in our foreign policy with respect to China, our alignment with the United States, our membership of the Quad, our opposition to the one belt one road, our claims on the POK. So all these things are related under this broader strategic aim. And any of these reasons can be taken up by an analyst and dwelt on, and you can justify it, because it's a backdrop. But the immediate reason for this, whatever has happened, is, and the casus belli, I would say, is that our infrastructure, which has taken a quantum jump in the last 6-7 years under the present government, both in terms of money and as well as in terms of the vigor that we have shown on the ground. So we've got an excellent road going up to the Bengaluru sector, and our infrastructure in the Hot Springs Gogra area. Mm-hmm. Very few people realize that from the Hot Springs area, you have got the Kograng River going to the north, and then the Chunglung Nala. Now, these areas, Chunglung Nala leads to the source of the Galwan River. When our post that was deployed in 1962 had taken this route, not the Galwan Valley route, taken this route to go to the post which was set up at the near the source of the Galwan River, and it actually went behind the Chinese. So this actually also leads from two directions into Aksai Chin. One is from the Hot Springs. It goes northwards, Kograng River, Chunglung Nala, and there's another route there. And then the eastern axis that goes from Gogra onto Konkala and then Lanakla, to the southern approach. So Galwan itself is a valley, is another approach, and we had started making the lateral roads into the Galwan River Valley. Same problem exists at Depsang, where we were making the connecting roads, or we can say the lead to the LAC from the main road. Now, the area between Hot Springs and Gogra and the Pengong So Lake, this area is also related to the southern approach to the Aksai Chin. So China is extremely sensitive. It feels that India in the long run is going to eventually lay its claim on Aksai Chin, in the sense that it's going to implement, the execute its desire to take back Aksai Chin. And it's so as Indian military becomes powerful, as we undertake reforms, our economy becomes good. If not today, then after 10 years, and after 20 years, India will want to take its territory back. So China wanted to put a stop to this development of this infrastructure. And it is this reason that it came in for a very planned operation, which is pitched at the tactical level in terms of Chinese ingress into selected areas, But the importance of each of these areas, be it Deptang Plains, be it Galwan, be it Hot Springs, Gogra, and the north of Pengong So, is strategic. It not only wards off the threat that China perceives to Xichen, it also puts us in a quandary because our main defenses are 10 to 80 kilometers from the LAC, which they are on the Ladakh range and on the Pengong range. And similarly, they are on the somewhere on the line of the Dibyo, you know, the road that is running north to south to Karakoram Pass. So this, the forward zone, which was being only policed by the ITBP, is the area in which they have come. Thereby, and these areas have been so selected that it gives them a considerable, I would say, an operational level advantage should the situation escalate.
Thank you, General, for giving us a sort of, you know, bird's eye view, both of the actual geography in question, but also in terms of linking Chinese tactics to Chinese strategy. A two-part question related specifically to India's response. To what extent do you feel was the response from the Indian side impacted or affected by both, one, the handling of the information by the government, which was initially downplayed, and two, through the intel that we had on our side? There have been reports, there have been analyses over how there are uncomfortable similarities to the situation 20 years ago that led to the Kargil War in terms of intelligence failure from our side.
As far as the intelligence is concerned, about China's strategic intent, see, I don't think that there was an information void. In my view, information would have been available about the Chinese conducting their exercises. And also, because certain reports about this famous now, the mobilization order given by Xi as early as January or March or something, the report has been floating around. But the possibility is there that whatever the Chinese deception fooled us and we did not get adequate warning from the our external intelligence agency, that is the research and analysis wing. Alternatively, if information was available, since the whole this thing is not in public domain, then we misread the situation. We thought it as routine Chinese annual summer exercise that they do, and otherwise, like the Chinese were preempting us, we also had plans that in the event that we come to know that the Chinese are preempting us, then we can also preempt the Chinese in the same areas. So I think it's a mix of both. Partially, there was an intelligence failure, and partially, whatever information that came our way, we misread the situation. And this misreading was probably both by the Home Ministry, which controls the ITBP, as well as by the military, who would have got the information in some form or the other. And I would say that the Army also flies, and the Air Force are supposed to carry out UAV surveillance, which even when it remains 10 kilometers on our side of the LAC, can look see way into the onto the Chinese side. So there has been a lapse of even at the level of the Army in terms of our electronic intelligence. Consequently, we lost the opportunity of preempting. Otherwise, just for your information, that in 1988, I was commanding a combat group. Just to give an example of the Fingers area, the Finger 8 is just west of the Chinese post of Sirijap. Now, Sirijap was my preemptive task. In case we felt that the Chinese something is coming up or the Chinese are about to mobilize, if we got the information, it was my preemptive task. And I had a mechanized battalion which has got amphibious equipment, and my plan was to swim across the Pengong So, and because it was not possible to reach because of the distinct obstruction at Finger 4, In any case, that time the road was non-existent on both sides. The roads have come up much later, almost 15, 20 years later after 1988. But it was it was my task. So we had troops available on the ground, deployed in the forward area, who could have preempted the Chinese. So definitely there was a intelligence lapse. And our misreading of the situation, we kept thinking that it's a normal routine border incident like Daepsong and Chumar and Doklam. Our minds were conditioned. And then nobody expected the Chinese to come in for a proper military operation of this kind. This was far from everybody's mind, especially after Wuhan and Mahabalipuram and whatever it's called. And our experience at Doklam, nobody ever thought that this was possible. So we misread the situation, and our initial response was due to this. And once we realized that this is what has actually happened, then of course denial and obfuscation for political reasons, and also probably to cover up a lapse, a failure. That has been done. I think COVID-wise, I don't think COVID really affects these kind of things. In fact, if you remember, the army chief gave out a very interesting statement right at the time of beginning of the COVID epidemic that came up, you know, in the month of March, he said that one of his principal tasks is force preservation. That means we must preserve our force during times of COVID. So whether it is India or China, militarily, such things don't really matter. And I don't think, that's of course a political question whether China was cornered on the COVID issue. I don't think these things matter in such things. And in my view, but certainly we militarily and politically we misread the situation to begin with.
Thank you for that, General. That was quite comprehensive. Now that we've sort of dissected what has come to pass, I thought we'd talk a little bit about what comes next, which is, you know, we're approaching winter. We're approaching, this talk about both sides sort of digging in and entrenching over the winter and this, you know, entire situation not resolving before next year. And, you know, that really calls into question sustainment of this deployment, because of course, as the famous saying goes, amateurs talk tactics and professionals talk logistics. So, we have to take some tough calls now regarding deployments before the snow starts, before the roads and the passes and so on are cut off. We have, I believe, elements of four divisions are deployed in this area. Additional armor has been moved up.
I think the divisions are three in number. The total additional divisions are two, and two divisions are the ones which are existing there. One looks after the LOC and one after the LOC.
One after the LOC, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, in general terms, though, this is an unprecedented deployment in Ladakh, at least in the last 20 or so years. This is already unprecedented, and so won't a winter deployment put massive additional strain on logistics?
You see, firstly, let me dispel the myth that everything freezes in the dark. It doesn't. Winter restricts the military operations for the simple reason that the night temperatures would go down to about minus 25, 30. And sometimes people have said it goes down to minus 35. But I would say that about minus 25, minus 30. But the day temperatures are relatively higher. The day temperatures remain somewhere around anything from minus 10 to 0 degrees, which are quite tolerable temperatures. And in my view, operations are highly possible. Of course, it does affect the weapons and does affect the body. But well-clad troops can continue operating. After all, people live in Alaska and people live in North Pole, South Pole, and people live in Siberia. So you just have to take your mind back to the Russian and the Finnish war, the operations during the Second World War. And it is feasible. In any case, we ourselves have the experience of 1962 when operations carried on till end of November. So that is one part. So that means, in my view, operations are feasible if this, if we cannot find a diplomatic solution, or either side does not go for a military option prior to winter. So we are stuck there for the winter. So as far as troops are concerned, see, basically, the LAC sector is looked after by one division in general, that is the 3 Infantry Division. And I don't want to go into the deployment because it lies in the realm of security. But basically, it is that on at the higher heights, where all the routes converge to stretch troops along the LAC, like we do it in the LOC, because of the vast terrain. But the total distance is almost close to 500 kilometers up to, and I'm only counting up to Damchok. Because south of Damchok is the old international border. It is really not the LAC. So to that extent, if you count that, then it's very difficult to require, you, as I said, you require additional troops and you require probably one more division to hold if you want to defend the LAC in the forward zone. So at the moment, we've got a division deployed at the heights where all the routes converge. This leaves the forward zone of about anything varying from 10 kilometers in the Chishul sector to 80 kilometers in Konkala, and 60, 70 kilometers, you know, in the Indus Valley, and a much little shorter distance of 10 to 15 kilometers in the Debio sector. Now, as far as the troops are concerned, I think both sides will have this problem. It is the troops that will have to stay put in situ would be the troops who have, who are in the forward zone. So one division is deployment areas already exist. They have the habitat, and the additional troops that you have put to man the LAC, because the other divisions are also meant for the offensive tasks. They are not necessarily located right up front. They may be held in concentration area in the area. And those areas which are vacated by the troops of the defensive troops of three divisions which have gone forward can be occupied. So there is, I would say, habitat wise, it is with the two additional divisions that have landed up there and the 3 Infantry Division. It's a manageable situation. Habitat-wise, I don't think it's a problem. China may face a little bigger problem, but Chinese capability and capacities are very high. Similarly, they would do something similar, that the troops which are right up front, they will have the habitat made for them, either in terms of the Arctic tents. Both India and China use similar tents. These are old, of originally designed based on the Russian origin, and plus certain amount of temporary shelters will come up, and they have a base in the area of Rudok and certain other bases available where similar action would be taken. So I would say habitat would get taken care of. As far as supplies and all are concerned, there are, unlike the Northeast, the passes don't close here with snow. The snow line itself is 16,000 feet. There is no snow below 16,000 feet. It comes, if it comes for a short while, it goes away. So the vehicles can keep flying. Our problem is additional because of the closure of Zuzila Pass and the Rohtang Pass. But so we perforce have to be on air supply in winters. Chinese don't have a similar problem. They've got excellent road network. In fact, this east, the Xinjiang Tibet highway is a super highway. I met a traveler who traveled from the town of Nagari, that's next to Damchok, to Mansarovar, a distance of 230 kilometers. He said vehicles were logging 150, 170, 180 kilometers per hour. I mean, such is the quality of the highway. So I see no problem in bringing up supplies in winters. And India would have to carry out stocking, but we've got ample time. We have enough notice, and the highway is open. Both the highways are open till the month of November. And I'm sure the Rohtang tunnel will be through by towards the end of this year. So then the roads can be kept open. So, well, it's a problem, but it's a kind of thing that that this problem which is can be easily solved. And I do not see that any major problem. But as I said, operations get restricted, but they're still possible in winters.
Right. Great. Last two questions we want to ask you, the first of which is, so the latest round of conversation between China and India, you know, we're talking about early and complete, I quote, disengagement from all friction points. At the same time, however, there is a realization that the movement forward by China along these various points where there hasn't already been disengagement could basically mean a fait accompli from the Chinese side. Alongside this reading of the border situation is, of course, the two-front threat that has been present in the Indian strategic thinking. In 2018, then Army Chief and current CDS Bipin Rawat warned that this scenario is real. The current Army Chief has, in January, mentioned that the Indian Army is rebalancing deployments and strategy along both sectors. How likely is it, in your estimation, are we obfuscating the situation by talking about a two-front threat? Should our focus only be on the northeastern sector? What do you feel is, how should this probability be managed? Or is that basically a non-starter to deal with the current situation?
Okay, firstly, on the disengagement process, you see, Chinese have come here with a clear strategic aim, their short-term aim, that is to bring to a grinding halt the development of infrastructure, which threatens their areas, threatens Aksai Chin and other areas which have been usurped by them before and during 1962 war. In fact, by coming into these particular areas, Gapsong, Galwan, partially, only they have gone back across the LAC, Gogra Hot Springs and to Pengong Show, they have actually come up to their 7th November 1959 claim line, also known as the 1960 claim line. Right. So they haven't come here for a jolly. Unless we give concrete suggestions, unless some sort of a major concession is given by India, they're not going to easily vacate these areas. And disengagement must not be confused with de-escalation. Disengagement is merely to avoid the repeat of an incident like what happened in Galwan on 15th of June. And that means just separation of the troops, and the troops are not going back. And that's exactly what the Chinese have done. They have only focused on disengagement at the points of where the face-off was taking place, where we were in close proximity, where anything could trigger an incident. But they have shied away from de-escalation. And we were mixing the two when we were talking. Every time our representative spoke, they said de-induction and de-escalation. So I don't think it was really taking place. Chinese really thought that way. They never spoke of de-escalation. So consequently, they are staying put. They have refused to vacate any area in Gapsong. In Galwan, yes, they have gone back to their 1959 claim line on their side. But we have also been asked to pull back 2 kilometers. So there's a buffer zone of about 4 kilometers. In Gogra and Hot Springs, they have not honored their commitment because both areas, they are extremely sensitive. They have only disengaged. They have not gone back, probably not gone back across the LAC. And at Pengong, it's crystal clear. They are very much up to finger four, and 8 kilometers of area is very much with them at the moment. And we have also pulled back a little amount there. We are also in a sort of close proximity. So the Chinese have no intention to go back immediately, and unless we have concessions. So one way of looking at it was that when it appeared that if we can agree to sort of de-escalation also, by the series of buffer zones in these areas, that means India's political aim, which was to restore status quo ante April 2020, is compromised to the extent that there will be buffer zones. And China will also have a face saver in the sense that while it cannot secure these areas, it will buffer zones, no development of infrastructure, no patrolling, and no posts will be established, no deployment will take place. So to that extent, their short-term strategic aim was also partially met. Both sides saved face. Of course, I put a rider that we must demarcate the LAC, we must share it with the nation and everything, the information. It must be publicly shared, lest there be ambiguity and speculation. But this doesn't seem to be happening at the moment. I won't rule out that further talk between the special representatives, or even if we may even see that a summit may actually take place, given the importance of the gravity of the situation. Mm-hmm. So to that extent, I have not lost hope. If we cannot reach this agreement, then I'm afraid this confrontation is likely to continue indefinitely for the moment, mm-hmm. until the Chinese decide to escalate, we must inflict a sharp shot in a short conflict, a more comprehensive defeat on India to settle this matter. Or we take it upon ourselves that it's long enough, we have waited for 6 months, 1 year, whatever time, that we decide that we are going to evict the Chinese. then the situation may dramatically change. So this is how I would put that. This is how we are poised at the moment. So it's going to be a long haul, and I see no immediate solution.
You made an important distinction there, General, I think, between disengagement and de-escalation. And as you noted, I mean, there is the possibility that either side will have to, you know, fire the first shot in a sense and kick off a short limited conflict to achieve its aims in the area. And I think you recently wrote a piece that said that, you know, India could take the initiative in this space.
Yeah, you know, I said that both sides can take the initiative. If China takes the initiative, the problem is that see, this whole battle is taking place in the forward zone, as I mentioned to you, that our main defenses are on the higher heights where the routes are converging, Ladakh Range, Pangong Mountains, and so on. This is in the forward zone, which was being policed. So one is, I hope that we have filled the void in those areas, because that's from where the operations will begin. Unless the escalation widens to other sectors, central sector, or to Himachal, or to the northeast. If I'm just talking of Ladakh, so I hope we have filled the void. Because our response will get is contingent upon that. So if we have filled the void and we are now sitting on relatively equal good height, so I think if the Chinese commence it, we can give them a bloody nose. And I think chances of us initiating will be absolute last resort if it becomes politically very difficult for the government to, you know, carry on with the present situation. It might, in due course, when we feel that we are strong enough in terms of, or the time is opportune, I won't say strong and strength is a relative issue at this stage. But the thing is that in any situation, we have to make gains, quid pro quo gains elsewhere. So even if the Chinese start escalate, then we must not worry about the loss of territory in certain areas where we are at a disadvantage, for example, in the DBO sector and maybe in other sectors where they have come in. We should go all out in some different sector in Ladakh itself and to make an equal amount of gain. Then if we escalate, then we can either go directly for direct eviction, which is inelegant, or we can go to another different area. There was one thing I left about the part of collusive action between China and Pakistan in the 2.5 front war. I think no country is ever prepared for a 2.5 front war against two professional armies, the Pakistan army and the PLA. This was all a kind of a talk merely done out of bravado. Even if we are faced with this adverse situation, then we will not have any kind of offensive capability, and we will get restricted to remain on the defensive, in a dissuasive posture in case we get stuck with the two-front war. And Pakistan is not that foolish that it will take part in a war which is, no matter whether they are all weather friends or what may be the situation. Came to Pakistan's direct aid in 1965, or for that matter in 1971. I don't visualize Pakistan this thing. When China is doing what Pakistan would like to do, why should unnecessarily Pakistan burn its fingers?
Yeah.
And supposing we are able to stabilize on the LAC, and in a situation where we are not that bad, we can always stabilize the situation, give Chinese a bloody nose, and Pakistan had it after that. So I don't think Pakistan will really do it. So this talk of two front or 2.5 front was actually sheer bravado. Mm-hmm. And it was the wrong kind of a posture and the public also was fooled by this. And I hope the government was not fooled by this, because not a shot has been fired on the LAC at the moment. I mean, up to now in the last 3 months. And we are all over the world capitals trying to buy arms and ammunition for the armed forces. And where was the need if we were ready for a 2.5 front war?
Mm-hmm. This has been excellent, General Panag. And clearly, I think what is the sort of writing on the wall is that this is a long-haul situation. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, the pleasure is entirely mine. I thoroughly enjoyed the incisive questions you all asked, and I'm glad that I'll probably, with my knowledge and my experience of this area, we have given listeners food for thought.
So summing up, this current crisis is unexpected. Misreadings of Chinese intent have certainly played a part, but all hope isn't lost if India and China can come to an agreement diplomatically. If not, however, this becomes a long-haul situation, necessitating some important decisions on deployment and sustainment. Importantly, the distinction between disengagement and de-escalation has to be understood, with both of these needed to achieve India's stated aim of status quo ante, that is April 2020. Here, India may need to take the initiative in military action to force a resolution if there is no movement past the winter. Thank you to everyone who's listening. We'll be back next week with more.
From our armchairs to yours, we're Ritika Enangad.